Welcome to the College Commons Podcast, passionate perspectives from Judaism's leading thinkers, brought to you by HUC Connect, the Hebrew Union College's online platform for continuing education. I'm Joshua Holo, your host. Welcome to this episode of the College Commons Podcast and our conversation with Hannah L. and Rabbi Harvey Winokur. Hannah L. is the author of Musar in Recovery, A Jewish Spiritual Path to Serenity and Joy, which is the topic of today's conversation. Musar in Recovery offers an approach to recovery from addiction based in a complementary approach between the 12-step program and Musar, a Jewish program of ethical development and self-improvement through the balancing of personal character traits. Rabbi Harvey Winokur, collaborator on Musar in Recovery, is the founding and, since 2018, emeritus, rabbi of Temple Kehilat Chaim, located in Roswell, Georgia. Rabbi Winokur is a Jewish spiritual director and facilitator of Musar. Rabbi Winokur and Hannah L., thank you for joining us on the College Commons Podcast. Hannah, give us a brief introduction to the scope of Musar in Recovery.
Thank you for the question, Josh. Addiction is a very isolating disease, particularly for Jews, given misinformation, myths, judgment, and shame that's very common within the Jewish community. So our goal was to bring a Jewish voice to the journey of recovery by enhancing understanding of the disease and helping Jews find a sense of identity and pride based upon Jewish wisdom in their journey to wholeness and healing.
The book follows largely the 12 steps of the classic 12-step program. And in that way, it has something of a pedagogical quality to it with lots of rich advice, perspectives, and techniques as well. I found it interesting that you prize multisensory learning so that you introduce, in addition to your practical suggestions and approaches, musical suggestions. Did you consider appealing to the other senses of touch, smell, and taste through, for example, recipes or something else?
We were inspired, actually, by Mark Margolius of the Institute for Jewish Spiritualities playlists that he included in his Torah portions over the years. And we realized that that had a value as well, as you say, in that extrasensory kind of going beyond just the text.
I will add to that. In the recovery journey, we addicts share our experience, strength, and hope with one another so that people don't feel alone. And I will say that for myself, selfishly, music is something that really kind of elevates my spirit, lifts me. So because of that personal aspect of my experience, I elected to focus on music as a vehicle to enhancing the learning here.
12-step programs and Musar are more than just systems and philosophies. They're also idioms with very idiosyncratic, colorful, and expressive vocabulary, but vocabulary that can also feel jargony and sometimes cliched or off-putting. How did you think about word choice for the book?
Number one, I'll say that words are one of my love languages. So I worked very hard at choosing each and every one of the 100,000 words that are in this book and wanted to choose words that helped people who were addicts and were in recovery, and as we say, in the rooms of the program, feel comfortable that this book recognized them and their journey and interactions with one another. At the same time, at the end of the book, our appendices, both for the Hebrew words and the words that are commonly associated with addiction and recovery, so those who were new to either one would also identify as finding a place here.
And I would add that Hannah and I spent a great deal of time when we transitioned into the Musar talk of the chapters and the steps to make sure it was clear and make sure it was accessible for the reader.
I want to pick up on another salient quality of the book, in particular to you, Hannah, and I'm referring to the choice to use a pen name as author of the book. Anonymity seems to a layperson and an outsider such as myself to be a fraught approach in addiction and recovery. On the one hand, it's more than understandable as an individual, and it is, after all, built into the names of the 12-step programs themselves. But on the other hand, the programs propose, for example, that, as they say, you're only as sick as your secrets. And there's a risk, I think, that one could associate, even if erroneously, anonymity with shame. Do you feel that tension? Is it a fair question?
The program of recovery, the 12 steps, have as one of their principles anonymity. And my decision to use a pen name was first and foremost to honor that principle. And while I am allowed to break my own anonymity, to reveal myself, because this is my personal story and my family's story, I would essentially be breaking the anonymity of those in my family who brought me into the rooms of recovery. And I have a very unusual last name. Given the sensitivities in the world today, I didn't feel that I wanted to expose them to the risk of that exposure.
On a philosophical level, removing it from your own case, is there a risk of the tension that I described, that on the one hand, anonymity makes a lot of sense, and on the other hand, so much of the program, the actual work, is about casting some kind of sunshine on the difficulties or the addiction or the habits that are underlying the problem in the first place?
I will say that one of the triggers for writing the book is to diffuse shame that any addict feels, or those who love addicts feel, with regard to people in their circle. It is a disease, and I try to set that out in the book, that addiction is a disease. And by virtue of kind of turning our lives into positive direction, by becoming mensches, as it were, but recovery is actually a source of tremendous pride. And I try to convey that in the book. So shame is a natural consequence, given the stigma that is associated with the word addiction. Hopefully I successfully dispel that, giving readers the book.
I certainly felt that you did. Harvey, any thoughts on the potential tension between anonymity and bringing difficulties to light?
I am not one who is in recovery. And, you know, from the outside, you know, listening to you, Josh, listening to Hannah, brings up that sense that the person isn't the disease. You know, it's a person first, but the necessity of kind of setting aside that identity so that you can address in a pure sense the disease itself is how I reflect on it.
Let me just add one other thing. There's great comfort in Jewish wisdom that teaches us that we're made with great potential. We're not broken. While we may be imperfect, that imperfection is part of what makes us unique and beautiful. And turning addiction into something which is a gift is the journey. So many of us who find ourselves in the rooms of recovery are grateful for the disease, either in ourselves or in somebody that we love, because our lives are richer by virtue of the journey of recovery, of finding ourselves, of discovering the dimensions of our beauty, at learning to see the beauty in our imperfections. All of those are important aspects of this. And one of the concepts that I dispel in the book is people talk about the traits that drive them to make poor choices that are expressed in their disease as character defects. And I reject that out of hand. As a Jew, I believe that our tradition holds that God doesn't make defective people. We are the way that we are because it's what makes us unique. But in fact, it becomes part of our beauty.
That's a beautiful perspective in and of itself. I would like to ask both of you a follow-up question about our human nature, appreciating that Judaism does not cast the human condition as an intrinsically broken, fallen, or somehow negative state of being, and agreeing with you, Hannah, in that regard. I nevertheless want to ask you about the relationship between the midot, the character traits on the one hand, and the yitzarim, the tendencies on the other, which you also write at length about. And here's what I mean. You go out of your way to say that there are not bad and good midot, or that make us bad or good, but that there's a balance and an interrelationship and a chemistry among these character traits. But there is in the tradition also the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, and the Yetzer HaTov, the inclination to goodness, which are explicitly valorized as bad components of ourselves versus good components of ourselves. Is it possible that we are modeled, M-O-T-T-L-E-D, in our makeup, and that the beauty of our makeup can include bona fide bad things that we have to either channel to good or neutralize or balance out? Is that a possibility? And does that cut against your approach, or is it compatible with your approach?
Here is the core of Musar, that we are, as human beings, viewed with a pure soul, and that pure soul remains pure throughout our lives. It is our actions and the imbalance of our traits that, as Musar speaks, pulls curtains over this light that emanates from us, from that pure soul. And we have the Yetzer HaTov, the good inclination, Yetzer Hara, the bad inclination, that was given to us also. And we, through the Musar, need, as you've spoken, to balance those. So there are no bad or good traits. It's only how we approach those traits. Each of the chapters has this arrow. Each end of the arrow is too much or too little of that particular character trait. We begin with truth. And in each case, Hannah and I looked at how that balance works. And in fact, when we look at the practices of Musar at the end of each chapter, give actions, kabbalot they're called, of if you have too much of this trait, you might consider doing this. Too little, you might consider doing that. The essence is that, yes, we are imperfect. Kind of reminds me, we were having a conversation with Rabbi Eric Gervis, and reminded us of the book, The Spirituality of Imperfection. And what's very important for Hannah in her journey of connecting Musar to recovery is that both of these, 12 steps and Musar, are spiritual curriculums.
I want to also comment, Josh. When I discovered the wisdom related to the Yetzer Hara and the Yetzer Tov, I loved it because it gave me a way to identify that the expression of these traits that I simply consider unuseful is the way that God made us. It's the way that we are. And, you know, there is a very natural expression of a degree of them. I read someplace that the Yetzer Hara has a 13-year lead on the Yetzer Tov, that they're all very self-centered by nature, by design, until about the time of our bat mitzvah, at which point we have the maturity to begin to consider the importance of others in our world and in the world at large. And there's a very natural variation in the rate of that maturation. And what happens in the course of the disease of addiction is that we get pulled off center, trying to kind of chase something that makes us feel better. So I actually think that it gives me something to hang my hat on that explains the way that I am. And when I combine that with my own personal theology, I'm guessing, which is, why do these bad ideas surface? And I think the answer is because it gives me the opportunity to make a choice. I think a lot of our purpose here on Earth is to make that choice. The world is designed with a constant array of choices for us, some related to kind of our personal choices and some related to how we want to contribute to the world. But I believe that's part of our divine purpose, as it were.
The College Commons podcast belongs to HUC Connect, the online platform for continuing education from the Hebrew Union College. HUC Connect includes webinars, syllabi for community learning, and masterclasses for HUC alumni, with interviews, expert panels, and classroom materials on topics ranging from the arts to civil society, Israel, and much more. Check us out at huc.edu/HUC Connect. Now, back to our interview.
You take great care to address the many reasons why Jews sometimes feel ill at ease in the 12-step context, largely, although not exclusively, relating to the 12 steps' tendency towards explicit God language and implicit or assumed associations with Christianity through that God language. I'd like to ask you both, if you had to choose, which of these two sources of discomfort predominate among Jews that you've known? And what does it teach you about being Jewish in the modern world?
The origin of AA, which was the first of the 12-step programs, is a well-known story. Two gentlemen who were from a Christian group who came together and they actually wrote the 12 steps. So the dominant barrier is the assumption that it is a Christian program. In fact, some people describe it as a Christian cult. The language of all the 12-step programs as it relates to God specifically and explicitly says a God of your understanding. And it doesn't need to be a God in a divine sense. It can be the program. It can be a sponsor. The single important aspect of it is that the solution is not you. Our best thinking as addicts brings us on our knees generally into the rooms with lives that are unmanageable. And finding some source of strength that's outside of yourself is the God that's referred to in the program. For those who believe in God with a capital G, that concept is applicable. And for those who have no belief in God, there is still strength to be found by reaching outside of yourself. And that's the reference to God that I embrace personally and is the factual truth about the program.
On the Musar side of this project and book that complements Musar with 12-step recovery, the nature of Musar offers a very distinctive set of insights and perspectives. And it turns out that the word Musar has built into it the idea of admonishment, even of chastising. Much of today's spiritual and psychological expressions, including the Musar movement itself and the 12-step programs, eschew the idea of admonishment as too harsh or as too associated with shame. Nevertheless, I want to ask, do we sometimes need an unambiguous chastising, an unapologetic kick in the tuchus, as opposed to a gentle nudge or a supportive shoulder? And if so, where do we find it in Musar and recovery?
Being familiar with the definition of Musar as discipline and ethics, chastisement perhaps comes into the first level of awareness, but Musar really strongly beats the drum for a non-judgmental introspection, so that we're not beating ourselves up, that we're not chastising ourselves on this first step, because if we do, it's going to stop us from moving forward.
As a disease, which addiction is, there's absolutely no value in chastisement, in helping a sufferer make the decision that they're going to pursue recovery and living a life of recovery. So while I understand your reference to that attribution to Musar, and in fact, I had an early discussion with one of the clergy members at my own synagogue who did share with me their concern about that aspect of Musar. It is not something that I identify with. The 12-step journey is one where we look at our own situation and decide whether or not our life is working, whether we're showing up as our best selves for ourselves, for others, and for our communities. The chastisement is perhaps regret that we have over having hurt other people and created some wreckage that we need to work through. It's not anything that comes from the outside. And in fact, the fellowship of recovery is very loving. It's about accepting that there is a purpose, there is meaning in what it is we're experiencing, and finding a path forward that's constructive.
I see a lot of similarity in the rooms and a Musar Vaad, creating a safe space so that one can reflect and balance. And granted, when one goes into the sense of, as we begin with anava, with humility, and having to set aside the ego, and having to realize just what we've done and what we need to do to go forward, there can be that sense of chastisement of self and shame, as you've spoken about earlier.
I'd like to close the interview on something that I've found really quite beautiful, which is to experience you personally in the course of this interview in relation to one another, but also what seems to me at least to come through in the book. And that is the one-on-one relationship between the two of you, and more generally, the fact that both Musar and the 12-step programs, in each in their own way, draw on key one-on-one relationships. There's the horizontal relationship in Musar of chevruta, of study partners. There's what I might call a vertical relationship in Musar, that of the rabbi and the student, although I hasten to point out that I say vertical not in a priestly or divine sense, but rather in the sense of a teacher or a more experienced person or sage to a student or learner. And of course, 12 steps famously rely on the sponsor and the sponsee. What do each of these traditions, the 12-step and the Musar approaches, bring to the one-on-one relationship, and how have those insights enriched your relationship?
I guess I'll begin by picking up on something you spoke of earlier, that I am a facilitator of Musar, but I am also a student of Musar. And when I facilitate a Vaad, I am just one of those in the Vaad. I might have a little more knowledge, experience, but I'm just a person who's struggling with balancing my character traits as well. And in that safe space, I give myself the opportunity to share. And I am fortunate to have a chevruta partner, someone who I've studied with now for 6 years, and we support each other. It is really a parallel relationship. And that's the essence of doing it outside the Vaad. The Vaad is not going to be a daily, weekly piece of one's life, but the personal relationship with the chevruta can be much more deeply felt.
Hannah, any thoughts?
Addiction is a disease of isolation. It's also a disease for many of us who really want to hide from ourselves, given the truth of our disease, and hide from those around us who judge us. And the one-on-one relationship of both a sponsor and a chevruta are about being seen. It's about finding our voice, finding a sense of identity and pride in who we are, the beauty of our imperfections, and being seen as worthwhile. So the parallels for me between the structure actually of 12-step work and the structure of Musar study were what drew me into the vision of weaving together MUSAR and the path of recovery. And in the end, recovery rests on finding confidence in myself. It's interesting, the MUSAR trait of humility, which is foundational for all of our soul traits, has a dimension of how we relate to other people and the level of confidence that we have in ourselves. And oftentimes in our disease, we relate to other people in an imbalanced way. It can be imbalanced shrinking. It can be imbalanced boastfully. But it stems from not feeling good about ourselves. That's where the addiction comes from, by trying to make ourselves feel better. So the work that we do in MUSAR and in recovery is about restoring that dimension which relates to my adequacy as an imperfect human being. And I've come to realize from my work in recovery and my work in MUSAR that I am perfectly human, and in that perfect humanity, humanly imperfect. And that's beautiful. And I appreciate being able to show up. My recognizing that I'm imperfect gives me compassion for other people. It allows me to accept them where they are and love them as they are, as we alcoholics or addicts do for one another. I'm in Al-Anon predominantly. My addiction is to the addicts in my life. I can be as crazy as they are, as we say colloquially. I know I'm not psychoanalytically crazy, but I can make crazy decisions. And feeling that I'm okay the way that I am is a gift that I get from both MUSAR and my work in recovery.
Good, back to your question about, you know, the one-on-one. It was serendipity that brought Hannah to my first MUSAR VOD, and I was her facilitator. But our relationship grew in such a fashion that I was able to, in a blessed way, be a collaborator for Hannah writing the book. In really thinking back on it, we became Chevruta. We became those very deep spiritual partners on this journey.
Well, I want to thank you for the collaboration and its product, MUSAR in Recovery, A Jewish Spiritual Path of Serenity and Joy. And I want to thank you both for taking the time to join us on the College Commons podcast. It's been a real pleasure and a great opportunity to learn. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Josh.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the College Commons podcast, available wherever you listen to your podcasts. And check out HUC Connect, compelling conversations at the forefront of Jewish learning. For more information about all that HUC Connect has to offer, visit huc.edu/HUC Connect.